Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to Midpoint. My guest today is a great British treasure, a professional ballroom dancer who's been a stalwart on Strictly Come Dancing for two decades now, having recently transitioned to judge. His time as a dancer on the show saw him partnered with many women in the Midpoint, so I imagine he's quite the expert. He's just published his sixth novel and regularly tours with his longtime partner, Erin Bogue. He's married to Hannah and has twins, Henrietta and George, who are six and have come a little bit later in life when he turned 50, so I'm pretty sure he'll have an interesting take on all of that. Our expert today is the fitness guru, Professor Greg White, the man who's taken many a celeb to the brink and back in their quest to raise money for comic and sport relief. Right, let's go chat to Anton. Thank you so much for coming on The Midpoint.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a delight, I can't tell you. I don't remember we've ever done anything like this before, you and I. And we've known each other for so long since you did
Strictly.
The show.
2007.
Is it as long as that?
2008. 2007.
You haven't changed a bit. I like the way you can still get into the full split. It's remarkable.
I haven't done it yet today, but I can if you
want
me to.
What do you mean? You answered the door in full box split. But this is nice.
I know.
I can't remember doing anything like this with you before.
I had many lovely conversations with you.
Oh, we spent a lot of time together.
And I've always admired you and
hold you
in high esteem and was delighted that you are in the midpoint of life so that I could have you on.
Well, there's a presumption that we know where the end is, of course.
that is true. Longevity run in your family?
Yes, it does, actually. Yes, not bad. We're quite fortunate in that regard. Actually, thinking about that in a slightly serious moment. I'm just trying to think about it, because both my parents are foreign.
Yeah.
And from when they sort of growing up and from where they grew up, long life wasn't a massive thing, you know. But yeah, they all lived to good old ages. So unless they got struck down by something unpleasant, but they...
That's the Spanish side.
Well, both sides, really. I'm just trying to think about the other side as well.
Did that involve, when you were growing up, did you have a Mediterranean approach to life with diet and kind of manana and naps in the afternoon?
No, I've never been a napper. I can't do that. Once I go down, that's your lot. That's me done now until the following day. So I don't bother. I can't. It makes me feel worse.
So
feel worse?
No, sometimes I you know what I've learned to do? Full face of makeup on my way in to do some work in London or something, like a big corporate event or something. I can, with hair, makeup, everything done, I can close my eyes for 20 minutes and have a good power nap
in
the back of
the
car.
No, and I'm also really nervous about the hair going funny if I was to nap and I end up with peculiar hair. I mean, those I have never been able to do that. I'm glad, actually, because it feels like a waste of life.
What, sleeping?
Yeah, certainly in the day.
But yeah, but what if you just recharge your batteries and get yourself
I don't need them recharged.
Right.
I,
well, let's find out why you don't need them recharged. Well, what's going on in Anton de Beck's life that he's at 56 years old?
Come on, we're never going to make it.
Just for clarity, because there will be
clarity.
Those...
Who needs it?
There'll be those listening that are going, I couldn't put an age on him. I wouldn't know how old he was.
No.
Because you've kind of...
35 is
you've looked pretty much the same through your whole Strictly life for 20 years.
I had life before that as well.
There was a life of professional ballroom. There was a life of being an ordinary worker in a sales job.
Having jobs.
When I say ordinary worker, that's not being disparaging to, you know...
You don't have to do that.
But what I mean is, there was a more...
I'm sure people aren't disparaged by the fact you said ordinary workers. There are lots of them.
One has to be so careful.
Well, one does. But I don't think everybody takes offense at absolutely everything. Well, maybe they do.
So 20 years of being... A nation's sweetheart, really, a treasure, a national treasure, Anton
de Beck.
Aren't
you a beauty?
How that, when you look back at that kind of build up to that, because I think one of the things that in life now that I worry about is the immediacy of things for young people, you know, instant kind of gratification, Instagram, social media, all that stuff. You know, you put in the hard yards before you got to that. And I know you're a massive fan of Bruce Forsyth and those old vaudeville kind of, you know, variety type performers who basically put in the hours and hours and hours. Do you see that still being a possibility in the modern entertainment landscape. Even Ant and Dec, you know, did those years and years, didn't they, on all their Biker Grove and other television programs.
Well, it was that classic comment that I heard recently that the AJ and his brother...
Curtis Pritchard.
Wanted to become the new Ant... It was his classic statement, wanted to become the new Ant and Dec, which is great as an ambition. But the two boys haven't been a success overnight. This is 20 years in the making. I mean, that wonderful expression, overnight sensation, 15 years in the making. Mm-hmm. And that is, for me, show business. You know, you work on your craft, you work on your skill as a performer, whether you're a dancer, a singer, whether you do both, whatever it is you do, but you have to work on your skill, you have to work on your craft, because you're going to go out in front of an audience and perform. And you're going to go out in front of my old teacher used to say to me, they've all paid their fiver. It's not a fiver anymore. They've all paid their fiver. They want to be entertained. So you have to do the job right. Mm-hmm. You can't go and busk it or kid them or any of that sort of stuff. You have to work at your trade. Same way as you would do if you were a professional sportsman, you know, mm-hmm. talking about the rugby a moment ago. You know, these guys coming through playing for it. But they didn't start playing last weekend. They've been mm-hmm. playing since schoolboys. So they've developed. And it's exactly the same with show business. Brucey, my great hero, well, you know, he was the mighty Atom. Mm. I mean, he was a boy star performing way. And then even when he grew up and he got older and he started performing as a comedian, he had to do the Windmill Theatre. He was second comedian, the worst spot on the bill. Mm. And he did hundreds of shows, working on his act, working on his delivery, working on his performance. And then what happens is, then you get Bruce Forsyth or mm-hmm. whomever. But mm-hmm. that doesn't happen overnight. And it is constant as well, because you keep having to refine your act. Mm. When I say your act, I don't mean it as in this is one act. You have to keep working on a new act all the time. But you're refining your performance and the way you are entertaining the audience. And it's a skill that needs work on them.
And maybe there's a kind of double-edged sword, isn't there, to having this democratization of the media? Because, you know, I always say to young people who get in touch with me about becoming a sports broadcaster, mm-hmm. there are so many platforms now. You can practice and you can do it. But actually, then you don't get to make mistakes, or you feel you can't make mistakes, because they're exposed in a way that, in the beginning of my career, I had, you know, two men and a dog watching when I was doing Sky Sports News. Mm. And first of all, there wasn't social media for them to contact me and tell me I was terrible. They'd have to write a letter and they couldn't be bothered to do that. Well, they'd have to drive by and throw something through the window. Exactly. So they didn't bother to tell me I was terrible. So I was in blissful ignorance just every night.
Oh, I think there's a lot of good that comes from that. Listen, I'm not a great social media person. I'm too old, whatever. Say what you like. It wasn't around when I was younger.
Not into it at all.
No, I don't. I have
your
it.
Your people help you do it?
Yes, I do have people who help me do it, which sounds idiotic. And I apologise, because I don't mean it like that in a sort of arrogant way. It's just, I can't remember to take a photo. My wife says to me, we went to Windsor Castle the weekend with the children. We went in and had a look around and blah, blah. It was lovely. I loved that. It took me back to when I was young. And my wife said, did you take any photos? And I went, no. I mean, it's not like I had to get a camera out and put a film in. I've got the phone. Click, done. No. So I actually took some photos with other people.
Henrietta and George will never know they've been to Windsor Castle.
Fortunately, Hannah took some photos. But I'm useless. So, and that's fine. So, you know, I have this wonderful thing that I don't, as far as I'm concerned, everybody thinks I'm amazing. I don't need to know the truth. So I live in that little sort of lovely world.
But you are your biggest critic.
But I am a big critic. And I have great, I used to have, when I had lessons all the time, had great teachers and great coaches who would only ever tell me it was terrible. Yeah. And this is how you're going to make it better. And I have people around me who I respect mm-hmm. and seek counsel from. I get as much criticism as I require from that. I work with great choreographers and great directors and stuff like that. And, you know, and I'd ask you as well, being brilliant as you are at what you do, what you thought of how I did, if I was doing something even slightly comparable to what you were doing in whatever regard. But I'd seek counsel from you, because I trust your opinion and I admire you enormously. So that's where I get it from. I don't need to get it from
people I've never met on social media.
I mean, that's fundamentally what it is. Mm. Because now you're just going on. Because what happens is you say to one person, goes, I really like what you did there. And you go, oh, thank you very much. Somebody else goes, I really hated it. And or worse to that effect, probably a bit more.
A bit stronger.
A bit stronger than that. So which one do I go with? Or do I go, okay, well, they've cancelled each other out, so I take nothing from that? You know, I need to be able to speak
to
someone.
Are you good at, I mean, I imagine being, it's a bit like being a sports person. I find sports people are very good at being critiqued. And actually a lot of the ex-sports people who become pundits and things, they really want that feedback because they're used to that.
Well, that's what we're used to as a performer.
And dance is brutal, isn't it?
Dance is brutal. And, you know, you go into an audition, for example, if you're talking about sort of theatre performance art, you'll go into an audition, let's say, for a show. You might be Magnificent. And they want, I mean, I've done it myself. I've needed 4 dancers for my show. I'll have 400 people turn up. Mm-hmm. So I'll have 2 days of auditions. All I need is 6, 10 dancers. Yeah. And so somebody comes in, dance Magnificent, and I say, thank you very much. No. Well, it's brutal, isn't it?
Yeah. Probably queued up for ages.
Yeah, queued up for ages. They've come along. They've done their bit. They've done the choreography. They've sung their song in front of a table of people. You walk out and you go, okay, what have you got for us? Oh, I've got this. And then they sing the song, cold, put a backing track on, or a pianist is there coming out on the piano. They perform this song for 6 people sat behind a table. It's brutal.
Yeah.
And then you go, okay, thank you very much. Well done. Have you got anything else? Oh, like a dagger. Have you got anything else?
Yeah.
Got me a bus fare home. And then, you know, or you do a competition. If you're competitive, as we were when I was growing up and competing, you know, you go somewhere around the world, you travel around the world, do a competition, you get, you know, you do the first round, you get cut out, you get, don't make that's a recall. Well, that's your lot. Thank you very much for coming. It's brutal. And I've always maintained competing is competing. It doesn't matter what platform or medium you do it through. And I'm a great sports fan and a great, I've played a lot of sport in my life, various teams, various levels, various sports. And I love it. But I happen to be a dancer, but a competitive dancer. Now, competing is exactly the same. It's exactly the same. It's basically, certainly if you're doing individual sports, so it was, it'd be you and me against the world, essentially. And we would have our own agenda. So we would use our coaches that we would want to use. We'd practice as we'd want to use. We'd eat the way we'd. So we have all of those things that maybe a tennis player might have that it would be unique to us. I've always maintained the first thing you've got to know is yourself. And then you can start to put into place a system that works for you. But you have to know yourself.
And in that process, I imagine like a lot of successful sports people, it's focusing on what you as dancers are doing, not what everybody else is doing.
Exactly
the whole time.
That. And how you do. So, for example, when I used to dance with Aaron, I danced with Aaron for 25 years, let's say. And so we competed for many years before Strictly came along. And we still danced when we were after Strictly. Now, Erin is wonderful at getting up early and getting in the studio for 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning to practice for 2 hours. Let's go and have practice for 2 hours in the morning. I'd rather stab myself in the knee, quite frankly, with a blunt spoon. I would like to go at 8 o'clock in the evening. Thank you very much. If it's all right with you.
Will you play golf during the day?
Yeah, I might have had a little knock round of playing golf in the day, but I couldn't do that. So, there's no point me going and doing that because it was horrendous and we'd argue and all sorts of things. So you work it out for yourselves. But that's the key to success. Know yourself. And, you know, for example, I've played golf in pro-ams and I watch the golf. I'm keen golfer, as everyone knows. And it makes me sort of laugh that every golfer I watch on television plays golf like Nick Faldo and Tiger Woods. Nobody speaks to anyone. No one makes eye contact with anyone. No one. They all get grumpy. They have the same mannerisms as Nick Faldo and Tiger Woods. Not one of them have the same mannerisms as Lee Trevino. Now, Lee Trevino was a great chatter, laughed with the crowd, all that sort of stuff. Won 7 major championships. I've looked at most of these other 98% of these other professional golfers. They've won no major championships, and they all think they want to be like Tiger Woods and Nick Faldo. A wonderful aspiration to have, but it doesn't fit you as a personality. Don't do what he does. Do what you do. Find out for yourself. Look at you. See how you chat to the galleries. Have a laugh with the galleries. Chat. Blah, blah. You might play better golf. Just because Nick Faldo doesn't do it or Tiger Woods doesn't do it doesn't mean you don't have to do it.
Can you sit there and say that as a man who's kind of had the privilege of experience to get to, you know, that I've learned this through all these years? Or was this something that you actually came upon as a philosophy and a theorem earlier in life?
I realised pretty soon So we'll talk about Time Before Strictly just for now, because it was only about competition dancing. So I realised straight away, but that didn't work for me because I wasn't that guy. Mm-hmm. I couldn't lock myself in my dressing room or wherever it was and just focus. I wasn't that guy. I needed to go and natter and chat and blah, blah, blah. And how you doing? Wander around and then get on the dance floor and get people a wink and all that sort of stuff while everyone's deadly serious and focused. And it's not that I'm not focused. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were fine few people more focused and determined than me, but that was how I performed. And I liken it to golf because I see this sort of herd mentality. Everybody's following the same road, and so few people are having success with it. They're not willing to try anything else.
Spending a lot of energy doing something, trying to do something that's against their nature.
Exactly.
And actually, that energy could be used somewhere else.
Again, try other things, and if they don't work, try something else. But don't just stick at one thing because somebody else does it and then somebody told you you must, or a sports psychologist said this, or this fella over here said that. Forget that for the time being. Find out about you. And then the other stuff, once you found that, the other stuff can support that and help you to channel that more clearly and more successfully.
And you have clearly been practicing what you preach there, because the way you do things, you know, has been, you've stood out from the crowd in terms of the professional dancers, and you've stood out in terms of your eloquence, and that's what's led you to be, you know, a judge. If you weren't as eloquent as you are.
Yes, and also role models. My role models are different to everybody else's role models. I mean, my role models are Brucey and Fred Astaire, and maybe because I'm a bit older. And also, it came to me a bit later. So I was, when Strictly Come Dancing started, I was already mid-30s.
You knew yourself.
I already knew myself. I'd had a long time competing as an amateur and a professional and travelling around the world, competing at a high level, mostly losing, winning a little bit, you know, as much as to keep you interested. You know, how competing is. Nobody wins all the time.
No.
Nobody wins anything all the time. And that's important to understand. So, you know, I've been through all that. And I also came to it late. So I was sort of doubly determined and more neurotic about the whole thing, because I never danced and competed when I was a juvenile under 12s. You know, like my children might start dancing now, for example, and come through.
They can start dancing.
They're potentially, yeah. We were doing a salsa in Starbucks this morning.
Two of them, because they're a twin boy and girl. Yeah. They can dance together. They've got a partner together at home. I mean, it's the dream.
Okay. It's the dream. It's the dream.
I tried. I had boy and girl, but they just didn't want to dance together. They did. They used to dance together watching Strictly. It was very cute. But I think he'd be quite dangerous on the dance floor now. So.
But I certainly give, I'll give him
Henrietta
the space.
And George, that would be, that would be amazing.
Lovely?
Yeah, so sorry, going back to what you're saying about them, because I'm interested in your child rearing habits as well. So,
are you?
Yeah. So what's your philosophy with them?
Soft touch is me.
Are you the good cop?
Well, no, we're both pretty good, Hannah and I, but I think I'm a bit of a soft touch.
Is that, do you think, because you're a little bit older?
Yes.
You were 50
I think,
when you had
I have to be honest with you, I think, you know, all good things come to those who wait. And I can't imagine having done this at an earlier age.
Really?
No, I think about me at an early age and I was an absolute lunatic. And
in what way?
Oh, just, as I said before.
But you've not been a drinker or a big party?
No, but just, I was...
Narcissist?
Who have you been speaking to? I was.
Were you more self-absorbed?
I was completely self-absorbed because I was. I only wanted to be. Because I had a goal, which was to win and to be successful. I wanted to win this. Yeah, it wouldn't have worked. I wouldn't have been very good at it because, you know, I'd have been so determined on being successful as a dancer that I wouldn't have been able to
be, really give them.
Yeah, be as successful as a father. And I like to think I'm good at being a father because I love it so much. And they're
has it surprised you
so
how
wonderful.
Much you love it?
Yes.
And was there a moment where you thought it might not happen?
What, having children? Yes. It wasn't ever a big thing for me. So I think you sort of get the impression that I was sort of determined to become a
great
dancer. And that was my life's work. So anything else didn't sort of come into the picture. That was the road I was on.
Because if I could just interject something.
Go ahead.
I think you met Hannah the early part of the last decade? 12,
so
13?
In April, we'll have been together for 11 years.
Right, so 2012. So that moment, obviously, that I can imagine you're determined, man, you probably, this is the woman for me. Had there never been before a point where you thought you would settle down with anybody? Because you must have been, there was a lot of women around you in what you do. did you ever think this could work, but I'm not going to settle right now?
I knew when I met Hannah that she was the one. It's sort of that odd cliche, but it's only a cliche because it's a thing.
But you'd never had that before?
No, never had that before.
Were
and also, I was
it?
Still early into my sort of, what I call my second career, my sort of Strictly life. It was still early, so I'm enjoying doing
that. So you were enjoying that.
And also working on that very hard. You know what it's like in the world of telly.
So going back to what you were saying about the kids, actually, there probably wasn't space for that
Also, but it's just a focus, isn't it? And the sort of the generosity that you have to have of self to do it well, I think. That sounds so
No, because what
terrible.
I'm getting is that you want to do whatever you do really well, and that would include a relationship and being a father.
Well, I think it's really important because, now, you have to understand as well that I take this from a male perspective, that it's...
That was a luxury.
Yes, because there is a difference between men and women in that regard.
This podcast doesn't need to explore that.
Good. And... I can show you. No, I won't. And so it wasn't that I needed to do immediately. Mm. And so I didn't need to give any thought. But the only thought I did have about it was this, that if I were to have children, it would be with the person I'd want to spend the rest of my life with. And that was really, really important. So when I met Hannah, I realised that she was the one and I'd like to spend the rest of my life with her, please, if that's all right with you. And then there was we had the conversation about having children, and then we had children. We had to have IVF. Mm-hmm. Hannah has endometriosis, and she was unable to have children. I'm trying to make it sort of short. So we went through down the IVF route, and we had great fortune mm-hmm. that we had one round of it, and we got pregnant, says the man.
Well, technically, you do have to contribute something.
Yeah, I mean, seconds, I grant.
But compared to having gone through it, compared to the daily injections and everything else, it's a trial.
Let me tell you this, we ain't having children. You're having children. And all I can do going through it is just, I have nothing but admiration and, I just bow to you as a female that you're able to do this. It is astonishing and wonderful and incredible.
And do you think as a man who...
That we would never have been able to do it.
Do you think as a man who is a little bit older and able to just really appreciate that there was a perspective there that maybe you wouldn't have had in your 20s?
Yeah, probably. I'd have been useless in my 20s. I was fundamentally a useless person in my 20s. I was only determined on one thing. I had no money. All I had was determination and an insanity towards being successful as a dancer.
So has having children, because often men are having children in the late 20s, early 30s, and it motivates them to kind of want to build their empire, to work hard.
Yes, now, but I got that.
Has it given you another kind of injection?
Yes, exactly that. Because suddenly that expression is so weird, isn't it? And it sounds so patronising if you don't have children to hear this stuff. All the time goes too quick, et cetera, et cetera. And the other one is you feel like you're doing it for the children. Mm. Where you go, well, I'm not doing this for me anymore. I'm now doing this for the children, for my family.
Yeah, with people without kids, it must sound quite annoying.
It's sort of annoying, really. Mm. And
but it does have a
But it's
truth.
A thing. Again, it's one of those. It is actually a thing. You do have this sort of, I'm not trying to make it exclusive or aren't we clever. It's not about that. It's just, it does give you a sort of a different perspective on stuff. And I lived a life of me for most of my life. And now you live a life of us. Mm. And it is a shift. It is actually a genuine shift.
So your biggest midlife learning so far, it would seem, is that this shift from it being all about you to looking kind of a lot wider and not just the nuclear family, but presumably that's made you kind of take in a bit more that's going on around. And I'm not that you're an urbane man, but the world, if you like. Because you think
you say I was a vain man.
No, you're an urbane man. Let's not get that quote going. I'm going to use that as the clip. You're a vain man.
You're a vain man.
Let's move on to vanity, actually, because
I like the way you've done your eyebrows.
I don't think it's a bad thing to want to look good and to want
Thank
to
you.
And you always immaculate. You know, you're always so smart. I just can't imagine you in casuals. Do you ever wear trainers outside of the gym?
No. Unnecessary. What's the purpose of that? A trainer as opposed to casual shoe.
Yes.
An actual trainer.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
No. So your sartorial elegance is not under any kind of microscope or questioning, but your health generally, since you've stopped dancing, because when you're doing Strictly, dancing all the time,
yes,
aren't you? And it's
moving. Well, for a few weeks. I haven't stopped dancing, which is lucky, because I go on tour and do my own shows, which are song and dance shows. So I'm still doing that. And I couldn't not. I wouldn't know what to
You'll
do.
You'll never stop dancing.
No, I don't think so. No.
I was making a cup of tea before and I popped out to tell Kenny you'd arrived. And when I came back in, you were doing some kind of shuffle on the kitchen floor, doing some kind of steps.
Tap dancing.
Was it tap
you
dancing?
You had a lovely floor.
I wonder if this is good for tap dancing.
It's a lovely sound.
So is that all you do then, exercise wise, dancing? Or is
I still gym and play sport, golf really, a bit of tennis.
How often would you say every week you're moving?
Most days. Yeah, most days of some sort.
And a diet, has that changed?
Yes, I've always been aware of diet, and you know, diet's been always a big thing. I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't know that sort of stuff. Never have. Although I've sort of have a penchant for a half a glass of red wine.
Oh, so you do drink a bit?
Yeah, it's not really. I can't drink any more than that because I get a bit funny in the head.
Right.
I have no constitution for it.
So just a little bit.
If I have as much red wine as that, I'd get a headache and I'd be a bit drunk.
He's pointing to a glass of water. For those who aren't watching.
So half of that.
Half a glass of water, basically.
Yeah, and apparently the doctor said to me, it's good for the heart. Mm-hmm. No, this is not a medical tip
for
anybody.
It depends where you read, isn't it? It depends what you read and where you read.
I say doctor. Yeah. And
Hannah, pouring it in the evening. And so do you think about portion size and all those kinds
portion
of things?
Portion size is important, I think, as you get older. Again, like all these things, nothing is for life. So everything shifts. So I don't know how you feel as a lady in these regards. I'm very aware of portion size. I'm very aware of time of eating as well. Mm-hmm. So don't eat too late. Or things like that. The late eating thing, I think, is no good for anybody. I think you can finish eating. Somebody said to me once, you must start eating earlier and finish eating earlier. What's fascinating about it all, actually, the things that we knew don't stand.
Some of the things don't stand the test of time.
No.
Really.
So most of it back in the day that we all lived by.
Eat pasta.
Is now nonsense. There you go. So the thing is don't get wedded to anything. Know yourself.
Yeah.
Because in a year's time,
they'll tell you something else.
Something else.
Yeah.
Apparently blueberries were going to be the greatest
thing of all time.
Apparently
and people
not.
Still died.
Yes, funny that.
But I think one of the things that I try to instill in my kids is eating lots of different things.
Yes.
And not
exactly
actually
that.
Kind of having
We're
a mono.
We're lucky with our children on
Yeah,
front.
Just
they
eat.
Do.
I mean, yeah, I've got two very good eaters. I mean, they're 17, so they've gone beyond the age of being fat. Yeah. You know, they were fussy eaters because they wouldn't tolerate it. But sorry, you're eating.
Why is that not a surprise?
Oh, you're going hungry. not having the same breakfast every day, not having the same lunch every day, you know, those things, I think as you get older, you get into patterns and ruts, and that's quite important. This seems like a good time to just bring in for a wee while.
No, it's like a terrible time to bring anyone in. Are you mad? We're
taking the attention
time.
Away from you. Greg White, who you will know Greg from his...
not Greg.
Yes, Greg, from his incredible efforts with Comic Relief, Sport Relief. He has trained up so many people to compete.
Trained up. You say trained up.
And his own sporting exploits. He's an ex-Olympian.
What sport?
Modern pentathlon.
Not a sport.
And he's an unbelievable ultra swimmer. Have you met Anton before, Greg?
Well, I certainly won't be speaking to him later, let me tell you that.
When the BBC ring you and say, we'd like you to train Anton for an ultra marathon, you'll say, sorry, this answer phone box is full. Bye-bye.
He was on the top of my list. Now he's slid down to the very bottom.
Well, there's no surprise there.
I think listening to Anton there, you don't need to give him any advice about movement. I think Anton is clearly nailing it when it comes to midlife
You're
health.
A very beautiful woman. Can I tell you that? Can I say that to you? I'm not allowed to say that anymore.
Would you, another clip for the advert, would you give us though, because a lot of people listening won't have the time to move every day in the way that Anton can, and you know, they haven't factored it into their life as much.
That's the thing.
If you haven't haven't factored it into your life, you know, through your life, that's when it's quite hard, I think. I've always trained, therefore I always will train. But if you're somebody who's coming at this from like, well, I've managed one Zumba class a week, or I've managed one run a week, how do you, you know, what is the bare minimum that you would say people should be doing so that they can get their heads around it?
Well, I think, you know, and what was lovely listening to you is actually talking about the children as well. And I think what's really important here is actually about the relationship with physical activity as a child is really, really important in terms of physical activity as we grow older. Mm. What we know is that physically active children remain active throughout life. And sadly, those that are inactive as children tend to be inactive as adults. So actually how we look after our kids really, really matters. Now, to put it into context, the WHO, the World Health Organization, suggests that for adults, we need to be doing, on average, 30 minutes of activity every day of the week, most days of the week. Mm. Now, for children, that is 60 minutes most days of the week. Now, that, to some extent, can feel insurmountable. So if we sort of posit that with the statistics of activity in the UK, for example, we've got somewhere in the region of 12 million adults who do less than 30 minutes in a week, never mind a day, in a week. And interestingly, if we take a look at children, only, in fact, less than half of children are reaching those WHO guidelines for health. So this is not about them becoming an elite athlete or becoming a superhuman.
No.
This is about physical activity for health.
But that activity, Greg, could be walking to school. We're not talking about having to run across country or swim for an hour. This is just movement.
It's movement. And it generally tends to sit, we talk about this moderate intensity, which can be quite difficult to understand. But effectively, it's any sort of activity that puts you under stress, that puts you a little bit out of breath.
Raises your heart by 10-20% at least?
And again, it depends on where you are on the scale. But generally, it's that sort of intensity where you are physically active, moving towards exercise. It's not necessarily exercise. It's just about activity. And I think actually, interesting enough, for adults, particularly for those at the lower end of the activity spectrum, activities of daily living, so things like washing the car, gardening, walking to the shops, can be incredibly positive. Mm. So when you talk about the minimum required, actually, for those who are less active, you only need really small increases in physical activity. So when we talk about time, I think what we've got to be careful of is this 30 minutes a day or 10,000 steps. Actually, any movement is positive.
But for a lot of people in really sedentary job, and I'm not talking about sitting as judge on Strictly, but people in proper sedentary jobs, that is tough, isn't it? Walking to the kitchen, if they're working from home and they're sitting on Zooms all day, walking to the kitchen might be about all they are currently managing to get their lunch.
Yeah, an interesting story was I was giving a lecture and a journalist asked me about these stats, basically didn't believe the stats. So I said to him, look, you know, what are you doing currently? They were writing a book. I said to him, just over the next week, measure how many steps you do a day. And they emailed me a week later. And on one of the days, they did 100 steps.
Wow.
Because and that was downstairs into their office, at lunchtime into their office, into the kitchen, back to their office. And so I think what's really interesting is that for many people, it is the default position is not to move. It's very easy not to move. We live a relatively comfortable existence now. Mm. Gone are the days where we were hunter-gatherers, where actually we couldn't eat unless we moved.
As an excuse, that's been a while.
It has been a while.
I think we should have found another way since the hunter-gatherer days to now. I think
it's very true.
And also, life expectancy, very low hunter-gatherer times.
Very low hunter-gatherer. If you couldn't run
Indeed, back in those days,
you were
gone.
Definitely gone.
And actually, you didn't have to be the fastest runner. You just had to be faster than your mate.
Yeah, exactly.
Or find a good cave to hide in.
Yes.
So what's great about having Anton on, though, is the fact that I think often it's what people think physical activity is. And I think that's one of the big barriers for people is that they assume that, you know, we've got the London Marathon coming up, for example. Anybody who starts running, unless they're running the London Marathon, isn't actually running. You know, that's sort of the socially acceptable distance that you've got to run, which is utterly ludicrous. But I think equally, we should look at all movement as being positive. whatever that movement is. It doesn't matter what that movement is. And in fact, some movements, so dance, for example, is absolutely fantastic, because what dance gives us is a whole host of different factors. Number one, and really importantly, what physical activity is valuable for is social health. So psychosocial health, and improving that social health by being with other people, by interacting, makes a massive difference. That also leads to improvements in emotional and mental health. The interesting thing about dance is that by learning new techniques, we have this process in psychology called mastering. And that when you're mastering a new technique, and you'll know this, Gabby, from being on the show, is that as you get
mastered
better,
anything.
But as you get better, you know, but as you get better, that becomes actually really motivating, because it's like, I'm actually going to get this. It's getting better. It's getting better. And the great thing about dance is that actually, if you do learn, you know, a particular dance, there are so many other genres
you can learn as
well. It's
giving you that mental, because one of the things I was going to talk to Anton about actually was how you keep, you know, your kind of mental dexterity in check and keep pushing yourself, because that is so important in midlife. And actually, you're right, dancing does do that, because, you know, most people who start off on a process like Strictly are not dancers. So even the idea of, you know, learning some steps, let alone what the, you know, what the movement is the challenge, isn't it? At the very beginning, people remembering their
that's
steps.
The big
did
thing.
Any of your
yeah no they
ladies...
rarely remembered anything. It's that thing, the big fear is the big fear was always going wrong. I'm not going to remember this. And, you know, if you stay in it for a few weeks, what happens is the process of learning and remembering the routine comes quicker.
And you see that with your partners.
Yes. I mean, you all have experienced it, but when you were on the show, at the beginning, it can take a bit of time for it to go in. And then by the you've gone a few weeks, you're sort of picking up the routine much more quickly. And what you were talking about there, Greg, with it all sort of comes under the umbrella of fitness. And it always seems like such a, as soon as you say, oh, I've got to get into shape, or I've got to get a bit fitter, it suddenly becomes this mountain, because it feels like we've got to do it in one hit. So you have to have 30 minutes a day. Someone goes, well, I haven't got 30 minutes. We don't have to do it all in one go. You can do it in 10 minutes. You can walk to the shops and back and then do it a bit later and then a bit later. Wash the car. So you can do it in bits. And it always seems like such a big deal. It's like, for example, we're going to go dancing. Oh, no, I can't dance. Well, yeah, but you don't have to dance. You're going to learn to dance. So what happens is I'm going to teach you some stuff and then you will be able to dance. And getting into shape feels like a very lonely thing to do. I have to do it on my own.
And also, you've talked a lot about things being exclusive and inclusive. And I think sometimes the fitness industry can look a little bit exclusive, can't it?
Especially and intimidating.
Social media and kind of, you know, the influencers, actually.
I think it's that worry of when you go to the gym, at some stage you have to take a photograph in a mirror of you in your pants. I think it's quite intimidating.
I
don't really fancy doing it, but it seems to be the thing. Everyone's got to stand there in a pair of trainers and pants and take a picture. I did it once. I had to delete it. Is that a focus?
Thank goodness. But I think what you say though, Gabby, is really important. And I think, you know, I work an awful lot within the fitness industry, and sadly we're in significant problem within the health and fitness industry currently, with closures of facilities all over the country. And of course, what that does is, it, as well as it being activity for all, which it is, irrespective of race or gender. In fact, what you find for women is that they use facilities an awful lot more than men do. And we have a gap which exists between gender, is that generally men are more physically active than women. And that gap is closing, but only closing very, very slowly. And when it comes to things like group sessions, what we know is around 3/4 of people who attend group sessions are women. And so it tells you that women like to be part of a spinning class or part of a dance class or a Zumba class, you know, whatever that is. And equally as well, actually, there's certainly a greater number of women who swim. And obviously the closure of swimming pools is a real... Yeah, and exactly that. Right? It becomes a social event. And so I think what you should never do is discount the importance of that socialization of physical activity. And I think that it doesn't matter whether it's a walk as a new mother, for example, a walk with your friends holding a cup of coffee. Great activity, really positive activity.
You're still putting one foot in front of the other.
Exactly right. And also what you're getting is the social benefits and the psychological, so the mental health and
the positive association of that movement is really important.
Caffeine is good as well. I like the caffeine bit.
You like the caffeine?
The caffeine bit sounds good. I like that.
Greg, I always love chatting to you. And by the way, I didn't introduce you with your proper title. And it's Professor Greg White.
No. Professor. Yes. They've not got to have done that.
OBE.
Have they?
They
one bad eye. He's got a bad eye. I had no idea.
Please come on again. Will you be in the family of experts? Because you've been on a few times now. So can I say that you're in our family? That would
be
great.
It's always
a
pleasure.
Have you got
pleasure.
Any big challenges coming up?
I've just finished one. So I just swam the Thames. So the 140 miles of the Thames.
Tell me it was wits. Tell me it was the width.
Do you know what? I wish I'd have chosen the width. Because it would have been a lot easier.
I swam the Thames. I went from HS Belfast right across to the other side. It was
don't swim there, whatever
minutes.
You do.
Congratulations, Greg. That's amazing.
Yeah, thanks.
Well done.
A bit of fun.
Yeah.
Well, a bit of fun.
Bit of fun. Went through a few swimming caps.
Yeah.
My next challenge is I'm going to take Anton out and show him what modern pentathlon is.
Yes.
Oh, I love it when you talk dirty.
It used to be based
me.
In Bath, I think, didn't it, Greg?
So it still is, yeah. Nice.
What are the sports for modern pentathlon? Is it one of them horses?
Yeah. They were talking about taking that out, though, a bit of controversy, wasn't there? Shooting, swimming, cross-country running.
Yeah, you're on your own naked.
Fencing.
That's
yes,
it.
Yes.
So you're shooting, sword fighting, riding a horse.
Baron de Coubertin, the founder of the modern Olympics, that was his thing. That's why it's never been dropped, really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely it's right. It's been there since the first Olympic Games.
My wife did that.
Did she?
Yeah, she did.
Did she?
Yeah. Modern.
I was jesting with you with all that. By the way, I was very familiar.
He
with
knew exactly what was involved.
Oh, he's backpedaling now.
I was teasing you. Yeah, my wife.
Just in case Hannah listens to this. Greg, have a fantastic rest of your day. Thank you so much for that.
Great to catch up.
It's really important somebody of Greg's expertise and Greg's experience to be able to put into kind of context what really you need to be doing.
Well, it's interesting to get the sort of data on the whole thing about with the WHO and the 30 minutes a day and how many people actually do it. Mm. And it's funny, interesting you said about the with groups, it's mostly women. And it's a very, it's funny. It was one of those things that you know, but sort of had forgotten about. I mean, it's a health club gym near us. It's closed down now, but they always had in the mornings spin classes and fitness sessions of some description or something full of women. One fella at the back. Mm. But then you go outside into the gym, out of the studio, full of men.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And for no reason as well, which I find interesting. Absolutely no reason.
And that's something I've been working on as well. Last year, we launched this project called Couch to Kilos, which was to get women into the gym. Because I think, you know, to some extent, many of these spaces, it's either you feel it's socially unacceptable for you to get for you to go in there. You know, much like, you know, men coming into dancing is a great example of that. And I think there are areas of the gym which sort of traditionally are either male or female. And actually, what you need is access to all, because strength training, which we haven't touched on, but strength training is absolutely fundamental. It's so important. It's the one thing that we don't do, which we absolutely should
do.
Do you do any strength training? If you haven't got any time,
of course, look at my machine.
I would use it for strength.
And that's another thing with fitness as well. The older you get, it changes. You can't do the same. I don't do the same sort of routines and regimes I did when I was younger.
You're not backflipping anymore, are you?
Well, I do, but only the one. And because it's of no use to you the older you get, which is really interesting.
Well, I love weights anyway, but I know it's really important as a kind of menopausal, you know, 50, I'm 50 this year.
No, in a million years.
It's really important strength training and I love it. But I know I'm not going to become Britain's strongest woman. That's off the agenda. But it is very, very important to do that. And I've been telling my mum this for a long time. She's 73 this year and she texted me the other day. She went, "So I've got to start strength training." I was like, "Oh, I told you this." But at least, you know, better late than never, better late than never.
Absolutely.
Anyway, Greg, we'll release you to go and dream up another amazing challenge and speak to you sometime soon.
Great to catch up.
Take
really
care.
Great to catch up.
Thank you, Greg. Thank
you
so much.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So life is seems like it's really great at the moment. Add into this mix your fifth novel?
I know you've got another sixth novel
coming out now.
But it's a new strand.
Okay, so we did the five was the first.
We did.
At the Buckingham
Hotel.
We've
got the Buckingham Hotel, which is a series that I'm going to continue to do. And that comes out in October, traditionally every year, October, November. And I love doing that story, but I've continued the series and I tell the story of the Buckingham Hotel and all the shenanigans that go in and around it. And it's, you know, it's set during the Second World War at the moment. The last one was called The Ballroom Blitz,
the
Blitz. And I really love the stories and I love the characters. And it's wonderful to just to be able to... I hate the thought of having to not tell the story of these characters
You don't
anymore.
Want them all to just be kind of...
No, I don't want to end. I like this because I can see them growing in front of my eyes. So I've got a new strand coming out in March, which just have come out, actually, and it's called The Royal Show. Now, this is a new story based around the theatre and the variety companies. And this is the Forsyth Varieties Company, run by Ed Forsyth. And
an homage?
It is an homage, actually. And they're getting ready for a performance at the Royal Variety Performance at the Palladium in front of Her Majesty the Queen. It's set in 1962 and it's a combination of my favourite things, really. Variety, performing, and the Royal Variety Show has been a show that I've loved since I was a boy growing up. But it's tense behind the scenes. Again, it's glamorous, but there's intrigue and there's one or two things that appear. I don't want it to be any spoilers out of the woodwork. And then there's also a big American star that comes over to perform with the company. But fundamentally, all is not well at the Forsyth Varieties.
So this whole venture into writing and into the world of publishing, again, it's another kind of midlife journey, isn't it, that you've undertaken?
But it's that lovely opportunity to be able to do wonderful things and things that I love to do. So once upon a time, you could never really do anything else. Mm. You know, you were sort of pigeonholed.
Stay in your lane, mate.
Yes,
stay in your lane.
It was all of that. But now, as long as you do it well and genuinely, and I love doing the books, I love doing the stories, I love telling the stories. They've been really well received. And I've got a brilliant publisher who allows me to do it in a certain way, in the way I want to do it. And it gives me an opportunity to do this as well. And it sort of feels the same to me as performing on, being on stage myself. But they are great stories, even if I say so myself. I know it sounds terrible. I would say that. But they are genuinely lovely
stories.
Could
you see them being adapted?
I think both of them would work wonderfully. I think the Buckingham Hotel is made for the screen.
Made for TV.
Made for the screen.
Yeah. TV series, maybe a Netflix. Who knows?
Come on, Amazon.
Anton, I wouldn't put any of that past you. I mean, probably starring in it as well.
I think there could be a cameo.
Bellboy, here he is. I read a lovely piece in the Times and how you described Hannah was just, it made me a little bit kind of not queasy because that makes me sound like I'm sick.
Yeah.
But it made me feel like it was just so lovely.
Oh.
You basically said she was magnificent. And it came through as not just some kind of like, my wife's magnificent. You really feel like you've hit the jackpot with your wife, I can tell.
Well, there's that lovely expression of Mary Poppins, practically perfect in every possible way. And I think she is. I think she's just perfect. I think she's wonderful. She's funny and clever and beautiful and generous and kind.
Was she ever worried about the Strictly Good?
No.
Which, I don't believe exists. I think if you go on Strictly and you want romance, you might find some. If you go on Strictly and you're in a good relationship and you don't want romance, you're not going to get any. There's no curse. There's just lots of fit people around the place. And if you happen to be single and fancy, you know, being with a fit person, there'll be somebody there for you.
Quite probably. No, not really.
She was never worried.
Did
she love, you know, watching you?
She loves it. And she didn't mind seeing you. I was already doing it, of course. It's not something I suddenly ventured into after we'd been together for 5 years or something like that. I was already doing it. So.
Because it is weird. I mean, my first day on the job on Strictly, never met this guy before, walks in, here's your partner. 5 minutes later, you know, you're kind of groin to groin as he's trying to show you a hold.
Yes.
Right? I've been married at this point for about 5 years and had two children. And I hadn't been that close to another male since probably...
For 4 years.
But it is a strange kind of, you know, when you're not used to that world. For you guys, it's normal.
But it takes a minute. I always felt like you had to meet your partner, you'd have a rub, and you'd get close, and you'd get right, okay, now this is what it's going to be like. And you go, okay, fine. And then you move on.
Yeah.
And then you crack on with it. And you say, right, now let me introduce you to your right foot. So, and then you're on. And all that stuff sort of fades immediately away after you've got.
Do they give really you guidelines?
No,
they don't say.
Well, I don't know anymore. They didn't when I was.
They didn't say, look, this is appropriate, this isn't appropriate. Don't.
No,
do this,
we're professional dancers. We know exactly what's appropriate and not appropriate. But what you soon do, you probably did this with James, you immediately go into a language that is unique to you two. So you go into what I call a personal language. Mm-hmm. Because it's your unique relationship.
Yeah.
So if you got into a studio with me, we'd do it our way.
Different to you and Anne Widdecombe.
But only very slightly. And because every one of them is unique.
So you have to be a kind of psychologist as well.
A little bit, because you've got to understand. I've got to know as much as I can about you the 5 minutes after I've met you. Because I've got to know you to get the best out of you.
So going back to what you're saying about yourself, getting the best out of yourself, it's exactly interesting. That. I, believe it or not, tried to do a little bit of research before today, even though I felt I knew loads about you. I just wanted to remind myself of all your Strictly Women.
Right? Oh, okay.
And
all amazing, by the way.
Well, exactly.
I love them all.
What struck me was you have danced with a lot of midlifers. A lot of women, I would say, were either menopausal or perimenopausal. In that kind of, you know, we talk a lot about that on these podcasts. You probably know more than most men in the country about that time of life. And you're probably very armed with kind of knowledge and experience of women and who...
Tea.
But also, women who... I feel like it's a common thing I hear on this podcast. Women go, do you know what? I've got to the age where I don't really give a crap anymore. I know who I am. Yeah. So you're with those women, which is a great privilege.
I have been, people have asked me questions about, you know, partners, all that sort of stuff. And I said the same thing because it's true. I've loved every one of the women I've been with because, sound wrong, danced with, because they've all been incredible women.
Mm.
Clever, funny. They've lived a bit of a life, a bit of experience. You have a common language because we'll be a similar age. So you can have a laugh with, can I use that in inverted commas? You know, Anne Widdecombe, fascinating, interesting, kind, lovely, funny, well-informed, bright, wonderful to spend time with. Has her views on stuff. You either agree with it, you don't agree with it. It don't matter.
That doesn't matter.
That's why they're her views.
Yeah.
You have your views. That's fine. So, but wonderful. Jackie Smith.
You've got all the politicians.
Lovely. Gorgeous, fun, self-deprecating, funny, fun.
I suppose with politicians, there's nothing you can throw at them that's going
to
phase.
No, you can't say anything to them. She had a moment one day we're in the studio and she's getting a bit frustrated and getting a bit teary because it wasn't going well and felt she looked crap and it didn't look any good and blah, 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 blah. And I sort of, now again, because you know them, you can do this to some, but you can't do it to others. I sort of laughed at her a little bit. Right? You don't laugh, somebody's a bit upset. But she suddenly burst into laughter. And she had this sort of crying, laughing thing going on that she couldn't control, which was hilarious. And we laughed and I teased her about it.
But you knew that was going to be okay.
But fine. Yeah. I knew it was her fine. Another one? No.
No.
Leslie Joseph. What a woman. Hardest working woman in show business. Absolutely brilliant. Never met anyone like her in my life. Absolute. Turn her up on like this. Wind the key. And she's away. 16 hours she'd be going. She'd film the show that she did. Birds of a Feather. And then come to the studio. And stuff. Yeah. It's amazing.
Amazing,
woman.
Yeah.
60-something, 70 years
but
old.
But you wouldn't have laughed at her.
No, but she had this thing with a jacket potato. She was so hungry. All I want is a jacket potato. And she burst into tears. She was, jacket potato. So I went and got her a jacket potato. Happy as fuck. Wonderful Ruth Langsford. I knew with Ruthie, I'd say to her, okay, if we dance, it wasn't very good. Now, the steps are still not right, are they? We need to get those steps right because it's not working. And I could just see her starting to well up. And I'd say to her, but the arms... Wow, those arms have come on tremendously. I'm loving the arms. And then they subside. Now, if I go, the feet were no good, slightly well up and I go, but the arms, shocking as well. I'd have full tears.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's go and get some tea.
So one body part at a time.
I can give her one, I giveth and I taketh away. Or I taketh away and then I giveth back. And it was, so you know.
Yeah.
Do you
miss all that? I mean, being a judge is amazing.
It is. And I miss all that. I miss the relationships. I do miss all that. Katie Darrow, we laugh funny.
Yeah,
I mean, the thing is, the one thing that we had was humour. You've no idea about these people's backstories. Yeah. And I find, and that's some of the stuff that inspires the characters in my novels.
Going back.
Is the backstory.
Yeah.
The bit you don't see.
Yeah.
Nancy DeLolio.
Yes.
Say what you like, but fascinating woman. Not for all the reasons that people think by looking at her. I miss
it's a bit more isolated being a judge, isn't
it? And it is still wonderful because you're in it. I mean, I joke about, you know, at least I get to make the final. But it is a thing. I love being Strictly Come Dancing. The worst thing about Strictly Come Dancing for me was getting voted off. I never mind who I dance with. I love who I dance with. I love the all of it. The big thing about Strictly, a bit thing about judging on the show is that I'm in it for the entirety, which I love because I love the show.
You don't have to go off.
But yeah, but also I love being a part of everybody's thing. You know, nothing thrills me more than I go, okay, listen, you need to work on your left arm here because it's in the wrong. Blah, blah. And by doing that, you'll actually help her get into a better position because you're. Blah, blah, blah. And then when I see them come back next time with a better left arm, it makes me sort of happy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I love all that.
You said something else in this article I read about Strictly that you said you think it changed the nation.
I seriously do. I mean, if it wasn't for Strictly, we wouldn't have a lot of what we have now on television as regards to dance. Dance was always the bottom of the artistic pecking order.
Right.
Started with sort of opera singers and then it went into classical actors and then mainstream singers.
Yeah.
And then eventually you get the hardest working lot with the dancers and they were down at the bottom. Because of Strictly Come Dancing, it's changed the world of dance as we know it, but also from an audience perspective, because we started to share audiences, whereas before we never really did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ballet world was the ballet world, the theatre world was that, and then the ballroom dancers were just competitive dancers, sort of a kindred spirit of the ice dancers, really.
Mm-hmm.
But they were in Olympics, so they got every 4 years, everyone started talking about ice dance again. Ballroom dancing was a bit underground, really. No one ever talked about it. It's that weird thing you did on, your grandma did or something. Sequins on, you know, if you actually dipped into the world, you'd go, whoa, this is a thing. As we now know it to be.
It's also cross-generational. It's just that got that beautiful kind of build-up to Christmas. And long may that remain because...
The other great thing about Strictly Come Dancing, I know, I sense you want to end.
No, I'm just wondering whether we're going to have the first 90-minute episode. That's not a problem.
I sense you feel like you've got something better.
You've got to go and do a voiceover.
I have got to do one. But from my book...
And you can do it here if you like.
I do it here. I did ask. And they went, oh, no, we couldn't impose.
You could have done.
I know. The fascinating thing about Strictly as well with the audiences is they like this thing called audience percentage.
Yes.
Or they call it percentage of people who are watching television at that moment in time.
Yeah.
So as opposed to the amount of people. So for example.
Oh that figure. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
so,
yes.
So for example, if, you know, we want to get 10 million viewers watching Strictly, but only 5 million viewers are watching any television at that moment in time, you know, that's all you can get. But it's percentage of the amount of people who are watching telly. And Strictly Come Dancing's percentage is over 50%.
Wow.
So it's like 52%, 54%.
To put that into context for people who aren't kind of familiar with viewing figures, usually it's only things like World Cup finals or major sporting events, which are those kind of come
one
together cooler.
Night
because you can't watch them on catch up and all those things, but you can watch Strictly on catch up. So that's what makes it even more incredible.
Incredible.
And that's why it's still a national conversation, isn't it?
It's
so
that's brilliant.
Is why, Anton, you are a national treasure because you're at the heart of that. So long may that continue.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, it's been great to meander around different conversations.
Not sure we did anything that your show is famous for. We stumbled upon midlife.
Well, I think there might be an Anton Dubek episode part two. Anton, thank you so, so much for your time and for being so generous and coming here and sitting in the podcast room, having a cup of tea. I really enjoyed it.
I've loved it. You're amazing.
For taking that out. Well, what can you say about Anton? That was so much fun. Chaotic, but fun. It was fascinating to hear him talk about how he's learned that the key to success, above all else, is knowing yourself and what works for you. Some people might overthink becoming a first-time father at 50, but Anton was very clear. Fatherhood happened at exactly the right time for him, and he's welcomed being a dad in midlife.
Although it was clear that he's not about to welcome trainers or any kind of casual wear into his midlife, which is as I suspected. Huge thanks to Professor Greg White, OBE, world-renowned sports scientist and physical activity expert, for sharing his thoughts on how we can incorporate more movement into our everyday lives. Do join me again next Wednesday for more lively discussions on all things The Midpoint.
I hate the thought of someone looking at me 10 years from now and asking if I have children and the answer's no, and them thinking either, oh, poor you, that's half a life, or, well, you gave it all up for your career. And neither of those is true, but I just need to practice what I preach and understand that that's not only their projection, but my projection of what they might be thinking, and that actually I need to let that go, because all you can do is live your own life and be grounded in your own experience of it.
Let me know if you're enjoying this new series, and if there's anything you'd really like to discuss on the show. You can join our Facebook group, The Midpointers, or message me directly on Instagram at Gabby Logan. If you hit follow or subscribe wherever you listen to us, then you won't miss any of the great stuff we've got coming your way. Thank you to Spiritland Productions for bringing The Midpoint to life, and thank you for listening as well, because without you, there'd be no podcast. I'll catch you next time.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.